Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, the 19th of December, 2017, and this is our 373 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue. And occasionally we hear from Shaharon or Mykomti using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And I want to say thank you to James in North Wales, Pennsylvania. James, you're quite the guy. You have continually sent us $20. We really appreciate that to Historicity Productions so we can keep all the hours running on the web. Thank you so much. I could say hello to a lot of people, but I'll just say hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello.
Yeah.
Great.
We got kind of raspy air right now, a little bit washed out, but I call that because we got the volcanic air.
Oh, you do?
Fog.
Fog
blew in a while. Yeah, the air, yeah, has
that's sulfur.
Pumice, or you know, whatever you call that.
Stuff mean particles?
Tiny particles, extremely small. So it's not like, you know, the really bad stuff that can bring down airliners. But it's still, you know, people were wondering, why is my throat scratchy? And, it, you know, don't realize that they're breathing
particles.
Particles, yeah. Or bad stuff. You know. Some of us get used to it, but still not good, even if you're used to it. Yeah.
At least
people say, I came to Hawaii for its beautiful, clear air, and oh my goodness, I'm suffering here. And yeah, that's sorry. That's
sorry.
Blame it on the Madam Pele.
Yeah, Madam Pele is throwing out that dust.
Yeah, so I got a little bit of a froggy throat right now.
And this is from the Big Island. It's not from Maui.
Yeah, it's from the Big Island. And it's, you know, not necessarily a lot of, you know, fumes and volcanic ash, but it's still enough to get you irritated.
I would guess you're about 85 miles away from Kilauea.
Probably a little bit more, but
a little more.
But that's okay. Plus or minus, you know, 50 miles. Who cares? But, yeah. Well, anyway, see if I can make it through without clearing my throat too many times.
Wow! How are the people on the Big Island?
They're not too happy, but, you know, some of them have really no choice. They want to, you have to, well, they have some of the cheapest real estate in Hawaii. Want cheap real estate, you can go buy real estate in the Big Island. Some people who had the really cheap real estate no longer have their home because the lava ran it over. Yeah, so that's taking a risk, but they thought it was worth it.
Well, I've been to the Big Island and been around Kilauea, and the sulfur smell.
Yeah,
really gets to you.
Stinks.
Really.
Anyway.
Does. So the visitors aren't too happy.
Not just the visitor. Some people move here, you know, and then they really get disappointed.
Hmm. Well, that's... There's always something. It seems like no matter where you are. How about the horrible fires in California?
Oh, yeah. We had fires that were bad here in Hawaii when I was on Molokai. It burnt half the island.
Hmm. It did?
Yeah. About half. Well, about a third, let's say. And when it came down to the inhabited side of the island, it would be about half of it. Oh, about a third of it. It was black. We had some bad fires.
I didn't know. Well, I guess Molokai's dry, too.
It is. It is dry.
Well, this is the end. This is probably going to be our last recording for the year 2017.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to skip over next week or next Tuesday, and we'll return again in January. So, before we got started, I said, "Well, Michael, do you know what you'd like to say? Maybe we could talk about Christmas and what that means."
Well, there's a lot of different things I could talk about. But right now, I've always, you know, found that trying to find something here that can relate to that city in the sky or that architectural sphere orbiting Saturn, the New Jerusalem. And, you know, whether it'll be standing on a high peak and looking down at a city, and that city, of course, to me was taking a nice look at it was Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. There's a peak over there. You can look down into Hong Kong.
I've been up there.
You've been up there, yeah.
Yeah, and you look down on the top of the buildings.
Yeah, you look down to the top of the tall buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at it and looking at the buildings go off in the distance really far. And I was thinking, this might be one of the views that kind of shows a little bit of the interior dimensions of the New Jerusalem. Because the interior, again, it's like your sphere is reversed. Everything is facing inward. And it's like a inside of an eggshell, yeah. But there were like windows in some areas, like the windows are in an apartment building or a tall skyscraper, and they continued on and on and on into the distance until I couldn't see anymore. It got smaller and smaller until tiny, tiny. Couldn't see any of it, just gone. And I was looking at that, and I could see way in the distance in Hong Kong. I still could see buildings and make out tiny windows way off into the distance as Hong Kong's skyline, you know, disappeared in the distance where they have still some tall buildings. And I was thinking, well, almost, but not quite. So that's some like 20-some miles, 30 miles away. So I guess the interior of that is a lot more than 20 miles in the interior diameter. But anyway, went to a movie this weekend. And that movie was called Return of the... Oh, no, it was called The Last Jedi. And, of course, the Jedis are a very antiquated and obsolete I don't know if you call them a class of people, but they're like an order of people that had practiced, attuning themselves to the vibratory energy of the universe, force. Anyway, this particular movie was really, in my book, very close to one of the best of all. It was absolutely a really great experience. And again, I was trying to find something in there that they got close. And some of the biggest ships are not big enough. The battle cruisers and stuff like that, they were just not big enough. Because, you know, that V-wing craft that I saw just suspended up there in a hangar, it's come to Earth a bit. It's a mile, approximately a mile wingspan. That's just about really a lot of wingspan. When I looked at the battle cruisers and stuff in there, and I was thinking, yeah, they're kind of cool to look at, but they're not a mile. They're, you know, there's a lot of texture. They got all of that wrong. The interior is all full of texture and all kinds of what they call busyness. And that's part of how they build a set. The New Jerusalem is so clean on the inside. Everything is, you know, as far as the controls and the interior controls of any of the ships are, like, not busy. Not like the cockpit of a jet, World War II jet. In fact, a lot of that is reminiscent of the old World War II concept of battle. And but it was fun. One of the things they did get right was somewhat of the moves, moving into a area of meditative energy, or meditative energy to the point where they can project themselves, which is pretty cool. Yeah, so got that one pretty neatly done. One of the characteristics about working with some of them, not all of them, I'm talking them being our extraterrestrial friends who are not necessarily material. They are kind of super material. They have trans-dimensional properties. And yet they can share them with you, but only share. I mean, we cannot possess them, but if we work with them, they can kind of share it with us. So I'm looking at that. Wow. And see how the movie, right? I think this one was back to the original George Lucas, I think. Anyway, you got everybody back involved in making this film. There goes my voice again. So anyway. And it was a lot of fun to watch anyway. So anyway, if you have some time and you want to get entertained and realize that what is out there in reality is in our local, just in our local system right here on our solar system, orbiting Saturn, is a tiny architectural sphere that is much more massive than even the largest sphere that they showed in there. Apparently, some of the architectural sphere that they you know, dreamed up still hasn't even equated to the size of the sphere which I visited. Yeah, so, but just fun to go over there and kind of like, wow, it's, imagine the New Jerusalem is even bigger than this. Yep, it is. So anyway, that's just a little bit of an idea. as far as Christmas is concerned, it's a cultural thing. And Christmas in Japan. Do they have Christmas in Japan? Yes, they do. And they have Christmas cake and love Christmas trees. And they celebrate Christmas with Kentucky Fried Chicken. That's a very special meal. Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yeah. And the old colonel, he had a pretty good recipe. So much so that they considered it very special, you know, time in which to celebrate and celebrate by sharing a bucket of Colonel Sanders' special recipe. Gotta be original. Yeah. So that's it. And their cakes. I tell you right now, when it comes down to Christmas cake, their cake is just unbelievably perfect. I mean, the detail, everything, just the texture is just, you gotta eat one of those. It's just marvelous. But again, it's Christmas cake.
Is that a special kind of cake?
No, it's just their cake, but everybody has to, when they want to buy something special, they buy a Christmas cake. Uh-huh. Yeah, and during Christmas. So that's how they celebrate Christmas. And is it a fully commercial time like our Christmas is? You know, great for the retail stores. I think without Christmas, there wouldn't be a peak season, you know, for retail. Mm-hmm. But in Japan, it's also celebrated as a peak season of retail. Mm-hmm. So even if they're, you might say they're faith-based culture, is not synonymous or identical to Christians' concept of Christmas, which, of course, the date is wrong. And, you know, that wasn't the day Jesus was born. It's actually it had to tie in to what was already being practiced. So they just shifted the date over and let it become the date for the birthday of Jesus. But that was some movie, if you thinking back at the movie, there was no concept of, there was mostly rebellion, the concept of a rebellion, but it's being very viciously fought with, you know, destruction of complete planets and things like that.
Well, you're talking about a movie again?
A movie again, yeah.
Oh.
I'm jumping around. Keep people on their toes here.
Mm-hmm.
Keep you on your toes. Yeah. So I'm going to two foreign places, basically. You know, when you travel to another area on our planet, sometimes it is... The interesting thing is that if you wanted to imagine going to the New Jerusalem, it'll be like going to a foreign country. But you could find interpreters, you could find guides in both areas. I had a guide in so many areas I went through. You know, in China, had a guide, a personal guide. And in New Jerusalem, I had a personal guide. And, you know, if you look on YouTube, you can find his image there, one like him, just like him. Poor guy got leaked. It was a leaked video of a little guy. And he did say he was a guide. And he said he was a graduate guide. And graduate. I still remember this. I said, graduate, you don't look like you're even 10 years old. And if you go to YouTube, you can see, get his picture. I don't have a link right now, but he looks like he's just 10 years old, a kid. But the similarity is, some of the foreigners are, you know, very different in terms. They still cluster around their racial lines, you know, because, of course, that's the history of their area. I mean, that's, so you go to China and you see Asians, but distinctly Chinese Asians. You can go to Korea and you see Asians, but distinctly Korean Asians. And one of the things I went over there and I was in Korea, and I didn't speak any Korean, but I did find someone that spoke some Korean, I mean English, and then he said, I try to guess the origin of the various Asians that visit Korea. And we can pretty much guess they're from Thailand, they're from Indonesia, they're these other Asian groups are from Japan, and Japan and a Korean, we can distinguish between them and a Chinese from southern China or northern China. And I said, yes, I can too, but not as quite as well as you, because that's the way it is. You know, it's, you got to be around a lot. Mm-hmm. But what happens is that when you travel in foreign country, you get that feeling. But to have traveled to the New Jerusalem is similar. There's guides, there are people, they look different, except I got introduced to a lot of different looking people. But there were people, nevertheless, there were people. Indeed, very different looking. Still humanoid, most of them were very humanoid, some very tall and gigantic. You know, I mean, I don't see too many 8 foot, 9 feet tall people, but I did, I mean, big people. I guess you would class them as giants. And also little tiny people, like 5-year-old kids, you know, and they look cute. And so they're all there too, and all kinds. But there are people. So a foreign land, you might say, when people are think about being taken to heaven and the idea of going to heaven. Well, I've been to heaven and back. At least one small section close to us, which is the New Jerusalem. It is also a spaceport. And if you look at the photograph we have of the New Jerusalem, one taken by Cassini close up and one of in the distance. But in one of them, we see a donut of light. And if you go to an earlier shot, you see a like a dashed line, which looks like a fuselage of a regular plane or something, and going in a particular direction, and then you see it gone. Well, that's one of the things that I notice about the spaces there, or like extremely large railway station where, you know, people would just all of a sudden fill up, you know, the walkways, you know, the walkways in a very congested station would be something like, you know, filling up maybe a 40 or 50 foot wide walkway, solid with people when they offload. And it was very similar in a sense, except, wow, when they came out and flooded the walkway, there are so many aliens. So I know that it's also a spaceport. So we have a tremendous move of people, alien people, probably visiting our planet, because I think it's kind of open to that now. We have, I guess, special passes that allow for people to move, come over and visit. And that's what they're doing. Probably a lot more other things that I don't know about, but still, they're around visiting. So anyway, this is one of the things I did, which was to go and see that movie, The Last Jedi. Supposedly Luke Skywalker is not the last Jedi. And there's a whole... the story is that there's a, you know, entire new generation of potential Jedi Knights, or, you know, and that's might be very similar in a sense to what's happening here and what my purpose is in sharing the reality of a heaven that is so near to us, yet so far away. You think of somebody like Elon Musk wanting to go to Mars. You might call it our yearning because of the potential possibility that may be there to actually launch out and try it, tells me that we really are exactly like my friend over there said, that if there be a time when the solar system is gone and has gone and it's no more Earth, the end of the planet Earth, I should hope, I do hope, that you would have long, long, long before that happened come out here and joined us living in this way in the universe. And that is really our destiny. But to give you a feel how it isn't so foreign, but it is a foreign country. It's like a foreign country and visiting in a foreign place. But you also link up with the abilities that are kind of like what was talked about in about the Jedi concept, about mind communication, the bridging of minds together, and how it happens for me. And that, wow, they got some of that right. Because, except they used it with an evil guy. And he was able to bridge some people's minds across those characters. You got to go watch the movie and find it out. But it's also part of the reality of a higher dimensional plane of real life and living. And that's what I'm here about right now, trying to, if you want to get entertained and get a little bit of a taste, pick out some of those things that get practiced, like when I do share mine with Theodidactic Sharun, or my Kamti, teacher, it is something that is part of our destiny. It is hoped that we gain that kind of citizenship so that some of the aspects of real life and real living in a divine sense, a heavenly sense, can be lived from here on earth. That is why the prayer was made, that to have His will actuated, God's will actuated here on earth as it is in heaven. And when you go there, then you get attuned, adjusted. Some of it is an adjustment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you come away with extra gifts, abilities that are really part of the growth process. We may not gain them here on earth, but ultimately they will be ours to just live with. One of the things it did show was the interesting fallacies of liberty and evil and that battle that goes on, which is really nicely played out. It was a lot of fun to see it. It's almost like it was being taught. So, yeah, you got to go watch that movie. So if you have time, Curtis, you got to go watch the movie called The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi.
Yeah. I have a little bit of an idea of the concept of the last, because having coming from samurai heritage and being brought up somewhat with a samurai training and mindset, it's almost similar to the idea of the last samurai, the last Jedi. Mm-hmm. In an order of what is very important, which was in parts of training, you know, just almost being lost in today's idea of what the samurai had. It wasn't just fencing. That's only one part. They had a discipline that was not ordered because of rank, but because it was able to go beyond this life, and life's purpose was able to extend itself beyond the boundaries of just living on a short-term basis, you might call it, having a very short vision forward and having nothing to take with you along, because there is indeed a progress moving forward. There was a when there was a point in which what seemed to be similar to Final Fusion, and in the movie, they portrayed it as a disappearance. The person just literally disappeared. It was displayed once to a explorer who came to Tibet to find this supposed mysterious transcendence of movement between reality planes. And he did see a monk go up in flames and disappear before his eyes. And this is something that they work toward, the final fusion. And he said there is nothing in this world, in Christianity or any other, that could have been compared to what he saw. And I neglected to write down the reference of who this explorer was, and I just like awestruck, because wow, this guy saw a as described in the Arantia book, a fusion between God and man, and the disappearance in flames, or what would be looked appear like flames. Yeah, in Tibet. So anyway, something that the movie tried to do, but it just went no flames, nothing, just disappearance. Boop. The only thing that burnt was the temple. The temple kind of burnt down. This tree had all the secrets inside of it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a nice exercise. I always enjoyed Star Wars, and you know, as the Urantia book is said, it was not a physical battle, but the idea that there is, you could see that there was that battle that was really being fought between between, I guess, a human will and different directions without, you know, guidance, but then being a very dark side. And there are areas, voids within our own universe of spatial understanding that we kind of look into, and we see these voids, places where there doesn't seem to be much at all. And then areas of clustering groups of what may very well be inhabited zones. In our own studies, or astronomers' studies of the universe. Anyway, it's fun. But also, there was, if you see it, wow, they're demonstrating something. So this is affecting, you might call it, the mindset, the adjusting people's understanding of what really is real. That is one of the fundamental questions of philosophy. What is the totality of reality, and what is real? So, that's anyway. From my perspective, having journeyed into some of the most splendid in my experiences, shown that by my Kamti, the teacher, my guide, I don't know his name. I only know him as my guy, my friend. Mm. Right now, I kind of forgot his name. I'm not good at remembering names. I hate it when I get introduced to a bunch of people and I never remember who they are 5 minutes later. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's like, oh, how rude. You know, I don't remember the names. Well, anyway, that's my problem. They are memory tricks. I tried a some memory tricks. They kind of came through, but they weren't very good. Like remembering Frondelenk as Frankenstein, was, you know.
Mm-hmm. When you said you've been to heaven and back, and you speak of the New Jerusalem as heaven.
It is.
It may seem like heaven, but are, you know, when people pass away on this planet and they hopefully go to heaven, they don't really go to the New Jerusalem, do they?
Not really.
Not really. So it's not that kind of heaven.
Yeah. It is tied together, but the location is different. They pointed out, it's so funny. I was in the classroom and it says, oh, do you know where heaven is? I mean, the central universe. Havona. It says, oh, yeah, we know. You can point it out to me? It says, yeah. But, you know, we're in this classroom. I mean, there's no reference to the stars or anything. Where is it? And they all pointed in the same direction. It's like, okay, you guys know where it is without even seeing the stars. Very good. But there was an indicator. The location is of heart. Something in them knew where it was. I didn't know. That's why I asked the question. A little bit of extra. Every little bit, once in a while, it peeks out. And that's how they teach. Just a little bit. At a time.
So they were pointing where heaven was?
Yeah. They all pointed in the same direction. And they weren't pointing to their heart either. They were pointing to the location of where Havona is. Where the central, where paradise is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you got seven super universes orbiting paradise. You know, it can pretty much get mixed up. But especially if you can't see reference in terms of direction. But when I finally did get out there to take a look, did they point it out to me? Yes, they did. But I know, it's like, okay. I do remember referencing the area around Orion's Belt in particular as a reference point, but it was wasn't there. It was from there. I didn't turn 180 degrees around, but it was around the field, someplace like that. They kind of knew exactly.
When they pointed where heaven was, which direction were they? Were they pointing straight up, or where were they pointing?
Well, if you're facing forward, they were pointing to the left. Hmm. Yeah, so that might have been outside. I don't know. I had no windows to see the stars. Yeah.
But they knew where everything was.
Yeah, so that tells me their sense of location of, you know, wow, that's very different.
It's a lot different than all of them pointing in different directions.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all pointing the same way.
Yeah, that's there, right there. Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. I guess if you were to think about it, we in that direction would be easy to understand if you knew. And there's some interesting YouTubes out there which actually give indicators of the location of our planet in terms of its position in the universe as kind of being way out there. There's a lot older areas. And I think all they did was point toward the oldest areas they know about, which is a very easy general direction. Yeah, I made it just a little bit less esoteric.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, not having never been out there, it's hard for me to.
Yeah, it's sort of like if you were like on the Western Shore, West Coast, and looking out to sea, and you know where Japan is? And everyone would point out to sea. Mm-hmm. It's across the ocean, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's just about that kind of a feel. Yeah. Mm. But because I was like, I don't know where Central Heaven is, Paradise is. There's a place, you know. Yeah.
And they knew exactly what you were talking about.
Well, they were teaching me about it. And it came down from the Paradise gravity. I asked the question, what is gravity? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they gave me a side tour about Paradise gravity. And that's where heaven is, really essential. Everything, and you know, goes back there, that way. Paradise gravity. But that wasn't the gravity that I was talking about. I said, you mean what holds you down on earth? And then somebody, one little guy, you know, way across the room, kind of spoke out and said, everything is getting bigger. Oh. And there is expansionary gravity. Well, you know, that's why if you wonder how come you drop two things from the tall tower, they fall, no matter what their mass is, you know, I mean, of course, some streamlining involved, but if air resistance is not part of the equation, you can take a small BB and a heavy cannonball and drop them, they fall at the same rate. But if you try to roll them, you know, push them, it takes more energy to push the bigger one, you know, because of the storing of inertia energy. But it's not related to that. Why do they fall at the same rate? Because they're not falling, because what is coming up at them is moving at the same rate of speed. That was expansionary gravity. But there is other kinds. They talk about static electricity as one of the phenomenons of how particles as well as entire universes are attracted to one another. It's not, it's just a lot of it there. And it's all coming out now because there are good teachers out there that are teaching about the electric universe, you know, and those are Thunderbolt Project, whatever. He's on the YouTube. So there are a lot of the stuff is now being taught as a, you might call it a attack on the status quo of our teaching, yeah, or what we've been taught.
Many things we're taught is just the wrong thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like the so-called Big Bang Theory.
Uh-huh.
That everything blew up and made grasshoppers and kangaroos and beautiful things, but that just is ridiculous. But if they tell the story often enough, people will repeat it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are pieces about it that if told in the correct way, like I would say, you know, in terms of what is heaven like, then you got to go watch The Last Jedi, you know, and you get an idea. Well, not really. It's not, you know, it's not a place to sort out heaven's reality. But if you have a concept that is built upon some of the fundamental real teachings that are in the Hiransha book, as well as my experiences beyond that are not in the Hiransha book, I can find a lot of it there implanted within that movie. But it takes, you know, knowing the truth. And that's where some of our teaching has gone. They have part of it right, but they also have some of it wrong. So, but then you just gotta kind of, it's like I was once taught, the truth is like eating a fish. You just eat the meat and spit out the bones. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you can spit out the bones.
Yeah, if you eat too fast, though, you swallow them and you get choked. And then there's a lot of people choking with the teachings right now.
With the teachings, right.
Teachings from school and what is this? What is somewhat wrong, not totally wrong.
Well, they know right from wrong, but they also want to guide people how history supposedly went down.
Mm-hmm.
We all know about that. That's nothing new.
Yeah, the victor writes the history.
The history.
Yeah.
It's a sad. That's sad, isn't it?
It is.
It is. It's sad. And it's a waste of the direction we should be going in knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let's go this way. Well, that's the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
But that could be the official story.
Yeah. Well,
that Jesse Ventura, he says the you know that they call it the official story to protect the officials.
The official story is to protect the officials.
Mm-hmm. But it's not the real story, not the truth.
Yeah. So anyway, a little bit of whet your appetite for perhaps like watching a movie. That would be, again, it's a fun movie. It's a good movie. It's not a boring one.
But they don't explain what is gravity in that movie.
Oh, yeah. They have interesting falling down scenes.
Oh, they do?
Yeah. Falling down. Oh, it's always scary to me, falling. I don't like falling. I get, scared of heights, real heights where, I mean, if you fall down, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
That was so scary to me to get across that open space on the levitator disc. The levitator disc, you zoom around on them just above the floor.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a skateboard or something, just moving around, and you can't fall off of them. And then we went out into open space. Right? By this, I had pretty good trust on the safety of the device. So I started trying to, do some maneuvers over open space. I think I've mentioned this so many times. I started doing some what would be called radical maneuvers like what people would do with a skateboard or with a surfboard, kind of leaning right or leaning left, but ended up being pushed back up straight, Like, I don't know where it was kind of a neat force, Feel it like, whoop, you're back straight up. But you do feel like something doesn't really hurt you in one spot. It's like the whole of you is being pushed off with a big soft push of a cushion. the unseen one.
Did that disc move very fast, or could you walk that fast, or?
You could jog that speed. When I was talking with the Dorians, the little Dorian, the child Dorian,
mm-hmm.
and he spent, the group had gone past me already, and he jumped out. He was the last one in the train, you might say. The single file, you know, they were all running a single file. And I told him, your group is past. Your group is going to go away. I mean, they're gone and they're gone. They're going. And turned around, okay, bye. And then he zipped off. And I think it hit a pretty high speed, like, you know, seemed like he was, whoop, whoop, whoop. He could have gone about 30 miles an hour, you know, from a standing stop. And he's off on his way, caught up to the group. The group was moving at about walking speed, much those travel, what do you call those things? Travelers traveling, not an escalator, but it's.
You mean those moving sidewalks?
Yeah, the ones you get in airports and mm-hmm. stuff. About that speed. No, they're a little faster than that.
So the Dorians, they were all on their own levitating disc.
Mm-hmm. Each one of them had their own, and
they had their own.
Yeah, and the little junior guy that came in said, "Hi, we're the Dorians." You know, that was cute when he said that. That's when I thought, "Oh, this little guy is a kid." You know, you have little guys, little Dorians. But they all look alike, exactly alike.
I wonder if they can tell themselves apart.
Seem to be. Definitely able to tell each other apart.
And what
I could by their personality.
What were they doing there? What was their function, the Dorians?
They were in the same classroom as I was. So, you might say that when it came down to classrooms, they were numbered, yeah, by the Marantia plant, yeah. Mm-hmm. The plant that could do the hula and had all this beautiful lighting coming through. Yeah, and it's like the Moses' burning bush. In fact, I believe it was the same, very same type of Marantia plant. Anyway, they were numbered, and we only had one plant outside of our room. And that meant, I guess, it seemed like we were at the first level. You know, kindergarten. They were at the same level with us.
The same level? You mean mm-hmm. in height-wise? Or?
No, I mean in progress, what we need to know, and development. The Dorians apparently were civilization somewhat similar to ours, but having, as far as progress, maybe a more highly technologically or sophisticated civilization, but they may have suffered some of the problems that came with their technology, which was a nearly extinct species that they saved himself from becoming extinct, obviously, to me. Why would they, you know, say that they're neither male nor female and not in between? I had to learn that they were something like cloned people, and they were living in the, but they cloned off of the same original, or maybe the last root of their people. And they came to that point probably because they messed up someplace, just like our planet is messed up someplace. And we got to learn our lessons better. Don't want to repeat them.
Yeah, they want to move ahead in progress.
Mm-hmm. But they don't want to repeat the whatever caused them to become almost extinct, whether it be war or a type of technology that, you know, screwed up their genome. You know, they might have tampered with their own genetics to the point where it went awry, you know, and they only had a little bit of, or one, the last pure person that could be cloned. And what happened was probably they had no more chances to naturally reproduce.
So did they give you an indication that if we are headed down the wrong road and headed the wrong way, like with the nuclear war, that they will somehow guide us or lead us or push us or help us? Or
they're doing it right now. That's one of the things that's pretty cool about the movie, The Last Jedi. Couldn't stay hidden. Luke Skywalker couldn't, you know, give up. It was a final fight. And that kind of portrays why we're still here. Why are we still here and our civilization is progressing, our technology is moving forward, but or have we changed enough to make to fulfill our destiny beyond where it could no longer be interrupted? You know, mm-hmm. I don't believe we could essentially become incorruptible. You know. But who knows where it could end. But they don't want it to end because of the fact that the human soul is a portable living artifact that can transcend physical domain in a body. It can be moved from one body to another. And those that have lived out their lives and have not, you might say, gone through the first resurrection cycle are, you know, pretty much stuck in location. Like they were stuck in, or are stuck in location in some graveyards. The soul is waiting for another call to resurrection.
So when you say the human soul is, did you say portable living artifact?
Yeah, the piece, the artifact. Not the whole, you know, human machine, which is pretty imported as a scaffolding to build out the real structure. We're, you know, not like a scaffolding on a building that's on the outside, building a bigger and more beautiful building. Mm-hmm. We're scaffolding is also still on the outside, but it's a scaffolding for a structure that cannot be seen, the human soul. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
You mean it, the human soul cannot be seen on the outside?
Yeah. You can see the person, but you can't see their, peer into their soul. But that is the most precious part of who we are. It goes beyond, you know. But the what we develop needs to be developed. It has to be developed through living. Experiential is the term used.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. I guess that is who we are.
Yeah. That's just a little bit. So, again, I plugged the movie. Not that I got anything to profit from it, except that the movie The Last Jedi has elements in it which kind of bring drama, you know, to the thing, some of the things I'm trying to relate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we can close out this recording and close out 2017. Welcome the new year. Christmas is around the corner. And hopefully we keep going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll skip over next week and start again in the new year on Tuesday. Oh, what timing?
Yeah.
Should I?
Yeah.
Time to say aloha?
Yep.
Okay.
Hey, aloha.
Aloha, Michael.